Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. So not sure what's going on here. Evidently. My goodness. Blog Talk is always a challenge. Good evening, everyone. I'm Ruth Hannah Marte Fio, and it is Wednesday, the 18th of December, 2013. The year is just about over. This Saturday, we have Yule, and our days start to get longer, just a minute or two each day, but hey, it's all good. And last week on Gather Round, we talked with a few people about the dire circumstances at Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. We talked with Katandi Bulger, Myrna Youngbear, and Jim LaPointe. And I want to say that this Friday, Jim LaPointe is going to be talking with me on Feed Your Head about that situation and more things with the American Indian Movement. But since then, some of the elders and youngsters have received propane and some electricity bills have been paid. So there is, for some of them, they do have heat. There's many families that still are without. So I would like to ask you to go to the Tetouan Grandmother Society Winter Relief Fund. This is on Facebook. That's Tetouan, Grandmother Society Winter Relief Fund, and you can find out more information there. You can call Katandi Bulger at 909-496-1126. She would then give you a number, a name of a family and the number of the Lakota Plains Propane Company where you can call and make a donation. I want to say please send good energy to this area. I mean, it seems like, you know, one thing happens and a whole lot of things. Right now, the propane truck is broken down. However, people are gathering around and getting the propane to where it's supposed to go. So I believe that they say that either the truck will be fixed by tomorrow or there will be other arrangements made. So don't let that stop you. Just send good energy, please. And I want to also, after the show, I believe it's on there now, but there will be another one put up. There's a picture, a photo that Gwen Holdenberry made. We did a show last night on her blog talk station called Here Be Monsters with Anita Stewart and named a lot of the organizations that are working for the Frontline Holiday. A lot of these are people who've been affected by things in the Gulf. There's a lot of Gulf area organizations listed here, but not exclusively. So that will be up and with phone numbers, with addresses, all of this. We're really asking people. We seem so blessed. We really don't have a lot that we should be complaining about here. And, you know, it doesn't take much to share something that you have. If you can't give money, call these numbers, see what they need, see how you can get blankets to them, how you could get food. If you could just, maybe you can't send, maybe you can use your card and send it to some kind of a food bank or, well, I guess food bank's free, some kind of a store, something in the area. There is something you can do. So please call these numbers. And right now we're going on with Tea Talk with Monique Johnson. She is not live tonight because they are just getting back from their vacation, and she wasn't going to be like touching down quite in time. So this Tea Talk is from a little over a month ago, and it's called Be Righteous or Be Real. It's all about making choices.
It is travel season for me, so quite often I am out and about and, you know, traveling around the world this part of the year. But I wanted to definitely get back in and say hello and do a tea talk. So, what is on my mind today? Today, as I taught at Sante, the Addiction Center, something came a part of the conversation. And in personal coaching, I've had this come up a couple of times as well. So I thought I'd talk about it today. So it's the life tool of being real and honoring your own reality every step of the way of your journey. This came up for me quite often as life changed, and I found that different paths were more healthy for me than others. So I had to really decide for myself, was my intention in life going to be righteous, or is my intention of life to be real? And when I was living outside in, and we've talked about that quite often on some tea talks, when I was living outside in, it was very important for me to be righteous, as opposed, on the flip side of that coin, is wicked. It was very important for me to be a moral being and to be a good person, a good boy, good girl. That's how I've heard it said lately. So as
I'm
going
to try to set my computer up. Would you come get help me with something? Could you?
And back then, yes, I judged myself.
Plug this in down there, but no, you're going to have to find your cord.
Problems that I got into when I was using that as my roadmap or as my ruler for life is that I would really judge myself harshly if I did not go by these rules that somehow made me a good person. And that was okay because at first I was not awake to that. And that branch of life, because, you know, for me it's all, we're all just on the tree of life and we just take different roadmaps, different branches, see how they work, let them go when they don't. So as I was on the branch of being, trying to be righteous or to be good, that led me very much into the rights and wrongs of life, the shoulds and shouldn'ts of life, the, you know, if I do this, therefore I am a good person. The problem with that is that for me, I had to keep doing more and more and more, and that seems to be the way that type of mindset, that type of life tool works, that if you do this, you're a good person, well, then you're going to have to do that, and then you'll need to do more than that, and you'll need to do something else as well, and all these things are making you, quote-unquote, a good person. What I would offer is possibly try on a different, maybe try on a different way of being, a different way of looking at that. Because truly, what happens when you can no longer do that thing that makes you a good person? Rather that's a physical thing, if something happens to you maybe physically or you get sick or whatever, or, you know, just all these rules that we make up for ourselves. If we can begin to see ourselves, when I was able to start to see myself as a beautiful being, as a good person, quote unquote, just by being who I am, 100% real all the time, if I can find my, quote unquote, goodness in being that, then I no longer have to concern myself with all the other checklists in order to make myself good. It came down for me is, am I going to be real? Am I going to be exactly who I am, honor how I feel? And for me, that's self-love and self-compassion. Every moment of my decision-making process or existence is just be who I am. And when I was able to truly do that, then the be a good moral person or do this in order to be good, that kind of just fell away because, you know, good, quote unquote, who holds that stick? Who holds that measuring the stick? Say, oh, if you go up here, then you're good. But if you go that far, you're not. And if you go down here, you're not quite. Who is the one that dictates that? And what I found is who dictates that is me, and it's in the mirror. So if I give myself permission, and when I did give myself permission in life just to be who I am and to allow my life to realign to who I am, because if the person doesn't who is in my life doesn't support who I am, then for me, I didn't need them to be really that close to me. Because if you can't support who I am, then we just aren't compatible. There's nothing wrong or right with you or me from where I'm sitting. It's just we're not compatible because who I need in my life are ones that support me being who I am. So that may have been a little rambling. I'm kind of getting back into the tea talks. I miss my tea talks. and for whatever reason, they keep me inspired too. But anyway, that's an opportunity for me, myself, to connect back into to see, okay, am I being who I am every step of the way all the time? And also maybe for me to be a mirror for you to ask yourself, are you being who you are? Because you are beautiful exactly as you are if you decide to give yourself those kudos. If you decide to look at the person in the mirror and say, hey, I'm beautiful, and maybe I would like this to be a little different or that to be a little different, but that does not dictate how much self-love and compassion I give myself. And then you kind of soften, keep those hands soft in life so that your life can align you and to move out people who don't support that in your life for you being who you are and to move more people in who do support you in your life. And a lot of the modalities of movement I do, whether that's yoga or meditation or dance, journey dance, and all these things I do, it really is to just help support to support myself and to also support you in finding your true essence of who you are and being that person and having that courage to do that. So if you're connected to me, you know that you're always getting encouraged to be who you are. So I think that's it for today. Thank you so much for sharing your time again.
So this is Monique, that's M-O-N-I-E-K Johnson, from HealthyMovementsInternational.com. And our next Gather Round show will be the 8th of January. She will be here live, as far as we know. So let me see. Yes, you can also catch all of her Tea Talks on YouTube, Monique Johnson, Tea Talks. Just go. She has several. Well, actually, quite a few more than several. So she has done extensive study of yoga, chakras, different kinds of empowering modalities. And we're very fortunate to have her sharing with us. Now, we're going to go to something that we haven't done this particular thing before. But, you know, this is the last show we're doing before the new year, and a lot of people make resolutions for the new year's and within the first month break them and all that, I'm aware. But tonight we're going to talk about something that a lot of people make a resolution to quit smoking or quit drinking or lose weight, something like that. Well, we have two guests who have quit smoking, and they're going to tell us all about this. Janet Schmidt quit this year and is doing quite well. Gwendolyn Holden Berry has been smoke-free, at least nicotine-free, I guess we should say, for 3 years. And Gwen hasn't called in yet, but hello, Janet.
Hi, Roseanne. How are you?
Hey, I am great. You know, we're here in the great Midwest where we've been chilly. So let me ask you, I used to see people smoking, they would, you know, even though they had to go outside to do it, it was like, this is going to warm them up. while they were outside, they were smoking. Did that ever really warm you up?
No, I thought it did. And then last, I don't know, February or March, I don't remember exactly when, we went on a little vacation to northern Illinois in the middle of the winter.
Right.
And it was a smoke-free house we were renting, which was fine. It was lovely. There were several, would have been nice places to go out and smoke, you know, a lovely porch overlooking the Fox River and you know, another nice porch area. And it was friggin' cold. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. I don't know. It was right after that I decided I was going to quit smoking. And I called, first I called my county health, public health department. And in many states, there was big tobacco lawsuits about the, you know, promoting cigarettes as a healthy thing, which at one time they did. I'm sure you remember that.
Right, right.
4 out of 5 doctors recommend Viceroy and
exactly.
stuff like that.
Doctors
and
yes.
So they have this settlement where they've given money to the states, and I live in Illinois, and in Illinois, then they gave me the number of the tobacco quit line, which is unique. You must live in Illinois for this. So I'm not going to give it a smoking cessation hotline. It's for Illinois. If you live in the state of Illinois, you can call 1-866-784-8937 or your county health department, and you can do that around the country. And they'll give you free stop smoking aids. They gave me a massive supply of patches and lozenges, and it was amazing what I learned. I had tried to quit many times. I tried with the friggin' patch, and it never worked. And she's
right.
The nurse.
I went to welcome Gwen. Hello, Gwen.
Hi, Gwen.
Hi.
The patch. Now, I'd like to talk about that a little bit because I have a friend who has, I don't know, spent hundreds of dollars, let's put it that way, on patches for herself mm-hmm. and her husband. And the thing is, and I realize you can't make somebody else quit. You have to work on your own issues. But, I mean, she spent a lot of money on the patch. But you learned something about people who smoke a lot. Tell us what you learned about now you were about a 3-pack a day or
yeah, just about a 3-pack a day smoker. And the woman with the tobacco quit line said, how much do you smoke? And I said, well, you know, 2 to 3, almost 3 packs a day. And she said, okay, there's one thing. She goes, if you smoke more than 1 pack a day, the patch is not enough. So she said, she prescribed for me a patch. I started with the 21 and I went to 14, went to 7. And then also smoking cessation lozenges. She said gum or lozenges, and the gum gave me heartburn, so I tried the lozenges. And, well, yeah, and I mean, if it gives you heartburn, it's like, to hell with that, I'd smoke a cigarette. And I put the patch on the 31st of March. I have not had a tobacco cigarette. I've been tobacco-free since then. I was right at the end of a political campaign where I ran for my first public office in a contentious race that I won by 2 votes to be on my city council, and I never smoked.
Really?
I had horrible illness, and I never smoked.
You were under a lot of stress.
Massive. And
I've the end of March, right? When you.
So,
now I went to
8 months?
Actually 9. Just about. Gwen, now you quit about 3 years ago, right?
3 years ago, December 4th.
Ah, okay.
Oh.
So you've
Good
had
job.
An anniversary. Yeah. Now, what caused you to?
A friend of mine walked in about a week before with an e-cigarette, and I tried it, and I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was all right, and the 4th is my birthday. So on the 4th, I said, well, you know, I'm going to give myself a gift, and I smoked the last Marlboro in the back, and I was 2.5 to 3 packs a day, and I walked away. I used an e-cigarette without nicotine in the juice, and still do, actually.
You still
I
do, yeah.
I have not Actually, no, that's a lie. I've enjoyed a hit here or there or drag off of somebody's cigarette when we've been having a few drinks or something. And I know that's a cheat. However, I surely do feel it the next day. And I'm just talking, you know, a few drags.
Wow.
I have not taken smoking back up. And in the last few weeks, I have to say, it's been the first time that I've had strong indications I've had strong desire to go and buy a pack of Marlboros, I'll tell you. Because I don't know why. We've had some stuff to deal with here emotionally with the family. And a close, close, good old friend. And I was pulsed that way. But, you know, instead I pick up my e-cigarette or I still imbibe with the pipe and herb, you know. But not very often. It's not a replacement. I will say this, too. I did replace it to a certain degree because I've gained weight.
Ah. Okay, now that's heard a lot of people say they've gained weight when they quit because they're so used to putting something in their mouth, they're going to find something. And so now I would think, though, that the e-cigarette would maybe take some of that away because it didn't, though, huh?
Well, it may do so. However, I'm pretty intense, I guess. So personality is intense or something. I don't know. I just, and I enjoy food a lot, of course. So it's always been something I've contended with all my life. I've been up and down the scale. So it was there for me to exploit. And now I'm getting my health back by superfooding, one of those blasters that, you know, knocks everything down. But I still got my e-cigarette.
Right, because when we Skype and you've got it in your hand. But, yeah, and I did want to say that I'm sure now probably I'm smoking more than you two, and I never consider myself a smoker. So I'm a situational person. If I'm camping, if anybody has any kind of little cigars around, you can find me there. And also sometimes when I get with my brother, it's like, you know, if he's blowing smoke in my face. But I never inhaled. I never had like the habit. And as far as spending money now, I hear that in some areas it's about $10 a pack, between $7 and $10.
It is in Chicago.
I know.
New York.
I know.
Yeah.
What's
New York,
Florida? How much is it?
In Florida, I think my sister's paying. Well, she began buying those really inexpensive brands, off brands. But if I were to go in and to the local convenience store to buy a pack of red Marlboros, it would cost me anywhere from $6 to $7, $8. And most of that, they'll tell you, is estate tax, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how that breaks down. I have a friend who buys like the cheaper brand now, you know, the ones that used to be $2 or $3, and now the cheap ones are $5 or something. But like Janet said, it's true in Chicago. Now, Chicago taxes a lot anyway, but yeah, they're close to $10. So, you know, that's another reason besides health. I mean, that's a lot of money.
It is.
It's totally going up. I wondered, either of you or both of you, what happens now? Now, Janet hasn't actually taken the drag, and Gwen, you said you have a couple times you'd take a hit from somebody else's, but you said you could tell it when you did, but how tempted are you when other people are smoking? How tempted are you, both of you?
Not at all.
Okay.
It's funny because when I first quit, You know, I don't mind the smell of the cigarette, like a good Camel or something. That was my drug of choice. If, you know, like you walk past people outside smoking, a whiff of the tobacco smoke doesn't bother me, but I can't stand it on clothes. And my husband also smoked, and he did not quit when I did. And it got, and at first it didn't bother me, but it got to where if he walked in the house, he just reeked of smoke. I got to where I couldn't stand it. And he, thankfully, I'm very proud of him, has now went about a week and a half without a cigarette. And he went to e-cigarettes. And he's using the patch. I used the patch for about 6 weeks and lozenges. And I still keep a bottle of lozenges in my purse. I haven't used one in quite a while. I don't know. I went in the hospital, you know, I was in the hospital for a month. I didn't even smoke an e-cigarette the whole time I was in this hospital. I had no desire to. And
a lot of people, that's been, now I have a friend who was in and for a week or so and didn't smoke, of course, when he was in the hospital. But as soon as he got out, I mean, that was his first thing. So
that's what I did last year, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The minute I got in the car.
But you guys didn't figure out how the heck to sneak a cigarette. I was smoking in the hospital.
Well, I would have done that years ago, but the past couple of years, they've really become vigilant on that in Illinois. And when I was in the hospital in 2012, I know they were, there was a smoking lounge on the hospital grounds where the medical people went, and they had shut that down. And they went over and over when I checked in saying, if you sneak out for a cig, we will kick you out. Like, okay.
That's
I don't know if you're
if
you're sick, would they do that? But, you know, it's really weird. I don't miss it.
Let me ask you. I know Jana has said that, like, you don't like to smell it now on people's clothes. Does other people on smokers, does that bother you, Gwen?
My sister smokes in my presence here. Now, mind you, I work from home, and I work in aromatherapy. I have essential oils all over the place. One constant remark when people walk into my home is, you know, oh, my goodness, it smells so nice in here. So, and it did when I was smoking three packs a day, too, because I work with essential oils and stuff. But my sister smokes in here, and we're having a Yule open house. I know there'll be smokers. I don't make people stop smoking. I ask them to open a window and please try to keep it over there. Only place it has bothered me so far, and it's only been actually once or twice, has been in the confines of a car.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I started choking the other day, actually, on my sister's cheapo cigarette. Like, give me a break here. I like the smell of American Spirit cigarettes because they're tobacco. Winnie's, Winston's are good, too. And those are the only ones I ever reach for when I'm having a few drinks. If I've reached for one, it's been for one of the natural cigarettes because I can taste the chemicals now in a Marlboro like nobody's business.
Okay, right. Well, that's a friend of ours. She smokes exclusively American Spirit, which was always, they always around here, Chicago, cost more anyway. And now I don't know what she's paying for them, but it's a pretty penny. I wondered then, does it bother other people? Like Janet said now that it's been like 10 days that her husband's been nicotine-free. Did he say anything? Was he or anybody else around you, did it bother them, Janet, that you were showing such self-discipline? And the same with you, Gwen. Does it bother
people? Was proud
people?
Of me. He started smoking outside when I quit. And I don't know if I really said, hey, outside. I think I might have because I smoked for 37 and a half years. I started as a toddler.
Right.
And,
before you were born, you started smoking.
Yeah, I was smoking, yeah. And
2 years old.
It was very hard. And every time I've tried to quit, I mean, it's like smoking was such a massive addiction, Ruth Ann. It's like I could never think how could I live without the friggin' cigarette. It was the first thing I reached for in the morning. It was the last thing I had at night. it was my best friend. It was something I could, I, it was the one thing in my life I consistently did. And I just decided, I have a step-granddaughter, because, of course, I'm not old enough to be a grandma.
Right.
And little Miss Olive was born on March 31st of 2012. Well, so her first birthday, I quit on her first birthday, and that was really my motivation. I would like to live a long time, and the irony of that was as soon as I quit, I got sicker than I've ever been. But and I told the doctor that, and I said, you know, if I'd known that, and they said, no, you're still better off having quit.
Of course, sure.
I had to have 6 surgeries this summer, and, I don't know, I'm happy about it. I don't think about it. And when I was sitting here listening to Gwen talk, thinking, I have no desire to take a drag off a cigarette. I'm holding an e-cigarette right now, which is quote-unquote dead, because I buy these Enjoy disposables. They look like cigarettes.
Yep.
And I maybe, one of those will last me like a week and a half. I don't smoke, and a lot of times I just play with the dead one. I'm not really inhaling. Now, Rick bought one of these fancy, the new ones that don't look like cigarettes. Have you seen those?
Yep.
I thought those are unusual. When I was at a meeting one night, and this guy had one sitting on the table by him, and I thought it was a flask. I thought he had a little, like, a one-shot flask. I was going to ask him where he got it, because I'm so ignorant, I didn't know what they look like. And then it was a day later, Rick went downtown, and there's a store that opened in our community, which is devoted to e-cigarettes, and he bought a starter pack with one of the real fancy glass flask things.
Let me ask you about that. Have you heard that some companies now, or some of the tobacco companies, are coming out and they may be trying to fight the companies that have the e-cigarettes? Because
what they want to do, Ra, is they just want to own the rights to sell them now. That's what they're
sell.
That's
right. Look how much money they lost. I mean, I smoked a lot, even if I was smoking cheaper cigarettes most of the time in the past few years.
If you're purchasing e-cigarettes or the new chamber drip e-cigarettes, the refill chamber bubble, you know what I'm talking about,
yeah.
The shot glass deal. If you're buying those at a store that's opened up, be in the neighborhood or something, or down at the mall, you're paying twice as much as you will pay online from the little independent business dealers who are on the. I give my business to the mom and pop stores whenever I can, because I'm one, and you're also paying almost double the money when you walk into one of those stores. So it's good to keep in mind, especially if you're conscious of your bank account.
I do try to support the local merchants, and, I am on the city council. I voted for them to open.
You're actually supporting your people, and that's a good thing.
But actually, a lot of the times I buy these Enjoys. It's NJOY
at a
convenience store, and they have a deal. They recycle the cigarettes. If you save the actual cigarette, it looks like a cigarette. It looks like a King size Marlboro.
A little lithium battery.
It's a tiny, it doesn't have the screw-off battery, it's all inside. If you send 8 of them back in, they'll send you a free one. So I save them
and
recycle them.
You know, they say sometimes, okay, you replace a habit with another. And do either of you think that you use these e-cigarettes as much as you... Like, do you have them in your hand, in your mouth, whatever, as much as you had regular cigarettes?
Oh, no, not at all.
No. You don't get me wrong. I always loved cigarettes. I always loved smoking, and I still enjoy the e-cigarette. I just don't have it in my hand as often. I don't have the need for it.
Right.
I like
the idea that if I want to sit down, a lot of times, the proverbial, I'm having a cigarette with a cup of coffee. I don't even miss that. I don't do that anymore. In fact, I've pretty much given up coffee.
Oh, dear.
Which is amazing. But I like to sometimes I'll sit down to think, or I'm reading something that's serious, and I wanted to light the whole ritual of lighting a cigarette inhaling and all that. And I find I'll do that with the little pack of the that the Enjoy comes in a little plastic pack. I can play with that. I can sit there, and sometimes I just deep breathe. But I you know, like I said, I've got a dead one, and I get the ritual I wanted, but I don't want it that much.
The actual, the e-juice, that it just really, all it does is it's water vapor that you're creating with flavor. But the bad part about it is, Rob, that a lot of people, especially if you've ever had ulcers or anything, it irritates your stomach. It gives you acid indigestion after a while.
Oh,
I can see how that would happen. I think what I did, though, is Ruthann knows that I am obsessed with one. Besides smoking, my other major obsession has been my face. And I learned at a very young age not to pucker when I inhale. And I never inhaled deeply. People would say, what the hell do you waste the cigarette for? Because you're not really inhaling. And I go, well, I guess I inhaled enough for me. And
yeah,
I learned not to pucker. So I don't inhale. They enjoy that. I think each one is the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes or two packs.
Really?
And
And
like I said, this will last me over a week on a fresh one. I just don't, I mean, I might take two or three hits. I basically play with it. And I'm stunned whenever I think of it because cigarettes were my friggin' life. I always knew where my cigarettes were. I always knew where my next pack was. If I was running low, I started freaking.
People hide them from themselves even, or, you know, they have them three or four places in the house so that if, you know, if I can't find it here, it'll be over there, or they hide them from people they live with. I mean, I've seen all of that. How would you think that quitting smoking might have some similarities to other resolutions people are going to be making as far as maybe quitting drinking or something? What do you think about the correlation?
Well,
you have to walk away. You just have to walk away. You make up your mind and you say goodbye.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Well,
it's
I also
I'm sorry, Janet.
Oh, go ahead. I also think that it's like I've seen too many people like, oh, it's New Year's. I'm going to quit smoking, quit drinking, quit doing this, quit doing that. I'm going to give up sugar. You know, don't do too much at one time. But having quit smoking, now I know I can do anything if I didn't know it before. And I mean,
okay, so
I'm
it's been very empowering for you. Okay, which is, I mean, man, that's great because so many times people just feel powerless. So once you, like that, once you get one kind of addiction behind you, it's like, wow, I can win. That used to be my thing. It's like, okay, something's going to be in control. Is it going to be me or alcohol? And, you know, that was years ago when I spent weekends blacking out once every weekend. And it was like, okay, that's enough of that. And I decided I would be in control of me. And so I never looked back. And so I think that's it. You make these decisions. So that doesn't mean it's necessarily maybe easy. For some people, it does seem easy.
I don't know. It was so different this time, though, Ruthann.
Well,
it was just for me amazingly different.
Motivations too.
The third or fourth day that I quit smoking, I quit it. I guess it was a Sunday, but like maybe that Wednesday, I got up and it was probably midday, and I realized I had not put a patch on. Okay, that's weird. And like I said, I went through that whole election. I mean, for Gwen and the other listeners.
Well, that's okay.
I had a month of not knowing did I really win.
Right.
If that was very tumultuous.
I think we talked about that some on the show before. But
and I never smoked.
What about that, Gwen? Right at the beginning when you decided, did you?
No, I just walked away. I must be the oldest here. I started smoking when I was 14, I think.
Wow.
And I counted it up just before I quit, and it was close to, I think I hit 40 years, okay, of having a cigarette.
Well, you're not much older than me, but I mean.
That's a long time. I mean, when you spend that much, and you both started young, was that just because other kids were smoking? Or,
yeah, absolutely.
I liked it. I really enjoyed it at first. Of course, it was probably something like that, but I would swipe a pack of my mom's cigarettes off the top of the refrigerator, and I'd take it out on my boat and, you know, be out in the ocean smoking half the night with a fishing rod. Hey, I'm smoking now. You know, it was really a meditation, too. I used to put the time aside. Smoking was, and then when I was sitting at a bar rail, the cigarette was part of my work, you know, at the bar rail. I mean, it was a tool. It was a friend. It was a
companion. Me too. I loved it. I mean, I enjoyed the taste of it. I enjoyed the ritual. I mean,
it was my walk to have the Marlboros in. I always bought shirts with pockets to work in because I'd have my cigarettes in the pocket.
It's amazing all the stuff you had to think about that.
Remember years ago, Marlboro had, I mean, a real big push. I knew people that had the shirts, they had the carry bag, all that Marlboro stuff. It was just like,
I still do. I still have a duffel bag and an knapsack. They're really nice, actually.
Yeah, they always gave out quality. Marlboro always had really quality premium items.
An ex of mine had several things. Yeah, the Marlboro.
I got to tell you, too, here's how nasty the tobacco companies really got and still are as far as keeping people hooked. And they do it through chemicals. I would take off for Europe to do seminars abroad, and I would have like 5 or 6 cartons of Marlboros in my suitcase, right? And that should last me. Never did. I'd have to go buy a carton of Marlboros that were made in Denmark, you know, by the same company, just made in Denmark. And in Denmark, they are absolutely verboten to put any of those nasty killer chemicals in them. So I'm in a Marlboro in Denmark that I'm sucking the heck out of, going, where's the beef? You know, it was
Well, it's like French cigarettes. What are those called, Galouses?
Galouises.
Galouises or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean,
those are
a totally different cigarette than any American cigarette.
Right, but they quenched my need for the tobacco rush. Would get from the Marlboro. The Marlboro's made without any chemicals. They were crap over there. But then I'd started buying the Gitteweezes and using them until I got back. And I should have stuck with them because they're just tobacco, but they're definitely a superior blend of tobaccos that gives you that wonderful rush. My mom smoked, but she only smoked occasionally, like when she drank. And she could smoke a cigarette in the car when we were traveling, and it would actually wake her up.
Oh, yeah. See, I thought that, too. And I wondered when I quit smoking, what the hell am I going to do in the car? Because I would chain smoke in the car. I was horrible. And I feel this need to tell everybody, I am so sorry. I didn't realize how bad it friggin' stank. But, I mean, it didn't bother me right away. It was a few months before I suddenly one day realized I can't stand the smell of secondhand smoke.
Well, yes.
And I've told my husband, keep your coats out of the house. I don't want to do your laundry, and don't come to bed reeking of cigarette smoke.
What actually smells about cigarettes here in America are the chemicals. If you're around people who smoke and smoke brands in their own company, like even Canada or Mexico or over in Europe, they don't stink the way that American cigarettes make places stink or clothes stink.
I don't know if you heard me earlier say, I don't mind the smell of a good tobacco, I mean, preferably non-menthol, the Camel or your Marlboro, or even a good strong Pall Mall or something. As I walked by, like the other night we went to a restaurant and there was a gentleman outside smoking, and I got just a little whiff of tobacco smoke, and that's not bad. It's the secondhand smoke that is, and I didn't realize how, I mean, because I didn't smell it. I mean, I'm sure as much money as I ever spent on perfume or air fresheners, it was wasted because of the smoke, and now it's not, so it's like...
Well, to an extent it is, because then... I mean, people will smell the cigarette or oil, but they also get that smoky smell. So it's a combination, and it's not a good combination.
Right. And
mango to green coffee.
I am so sorry.
Oh, okay. It's like, oh, okay.
It popped up on my screen. I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine. But, well, I know that I myself used to, I wasn't smoking, but if I went to a bar for music or whatever and just had a good time, I mean, I thought that a bar was supposed to be smoke-filled. That was just me. I mean, it was the ambiance, okay? And
right.
Then they came out with this not smoking in bars, and I thought, well, what the hell? I mean, why even go unless you really, really want to hear the band? But I might not do it that night when I got home, depending on how late it was. First thing in the morning is like, get that out of my hair.
Yeah.
Because it was just, I mean, I couldn't stand it myself. It was just because in the old days with the smoke-filled bars, I mean, you know, that's when you walk in, it's sort of dimly lit and it's sort of foggy because of all that smoke. And, you know, you didn't have to be in there very long to have it in your hair.
Well, see, I never appreciated that as a smoker. And having smoked from a very young age, I had never been in a bar without smoking. And
then
when they passed that crap in Illinois, I don't know where Gwen is from, but you can't smoke in bars or restaurants or public places here.
Here you can smoke in a bar here if they're not serving food. In New York City, you had to be out on the street, but I'm told now they don't even let you do that. I said,
you can't be within
Now, Tim Robbins, and he's one. He owns it's a private club, like a bottle club, but you can smoke.
Oh.
There's lots of private clubs now that have opened up and private bars.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn and New York City.
And see, Illinois carefully kept that out. You can't do private clubs here.
Well, you can in New York. If that ever changes, you're going to lose music industry. And that's something that, you know, there's still plenty of people in entertainment. If you take a look, I mean, if you catch Carrie Fisher, who I happen to like here, on television quite a bit, like HBO or in an interview, she has an e-cigarette in her hand constantly. So does Brad Pitt. He's always got the e-cigarette. There's several people. You see them everywhere in photographs of celebrities. You see them now in photographs of people on Facebook.
In Illinois, they're trying to make e-cigarettes the same as regular. They're trying. They've already done it on terms of the tax rate. They changed the law. Was it? I can't remember if it was last year. Okay, in 2012, where the state tax on e-cigarettes is the same as on tobacco cigarettes.
That's why you buy it online.
And that's another thing. But I mean, it's also going to change. The law is going to change very shortly. I think at the end of 2015, might be 14. That the sales tax holiday that we have, like if you buy from Amazon.com, for example, and Amazon does not have a location in your state, you don't pay sales tax.
I thought that was already in effect. Oh, okay.
No, and in Illinois hasn't. I mean, they're passing it nationwide. They're getting rid of the sales tax exemption. I can't remember if it ends in December of 14 or 15. But so that is something. But, I mean, I find that I don't think e-cigarettes are anything like a real cigarette.
Now, you were talking about private
clubs. They're nothing like a real cigarette. People should not walk away from this show thinking that there's any kind of danger with an e-cigarette. That's
no,
probably...
I mean, you could be sitting there, I could be sitting there chain smoking an e-cigarette next to the most ardent anti-tobacco person, and they would not smell it. It doesn't have an odor.
You use the same process that an e-cigarette affords somebody the ability to think that they're smoking, well, that they're smoking, is the same process they use to fumigate children's wards and hospitals. I mean, it's the same carrier, the same glycerin. I mean, what it is propaganda by the tobacco industry, which is pressuring, of course, the politicians, and they, of course, are looking for whatever they can make out of it. You know, there's money there. They want it. It's going in their pocket,
sure.
And they're going to do what they can to make it possible for the tobacco industry to crush e-cigarette distribution sales or even credibility until they have a handle on all of it so that they can profit by it and take it off.
Right. What about the fact, have you been smoking the, well, I use the word smoking, but using the e-cigarettes and been around people and got any kind of negative reaction?
No. I've had people say, what is that? And then they're curious, and then, but, you know, I was going to say, some years ago, this probably was like 16 years ago, they came out with a smoking cessation product that was like a little inhaler. It looked like a little white mouthpiece that I think I've seen on some kind of cigars. And the premise of this was you had these little cartridges you could pop in it, and when you got the urge to smoke, you would take a hit off this inhaler. Well,
yeah.
It was nothing like a cigarette. It was like inhaling asthma medicine, you know, the inhaled ones. It didn't have anything like it. And I did that for, I don't even think I finished the trial set my doctor gave me because I really didn't like it. Whereas
yeah.
the one thing is the vapor, and some people call it vaping, in the e-cigarette does give you the mouth feel of smoke, sort of.
Yeah, it's
pretty
called
much.
A hit. It's called
it's
a hit.
A
you
hit.
Get a tobacco hit when you take, and a good system. When it's a weak one, you don't. But I think that the disposable refillables, the small ones like the Joys and there's the 901s and pen size. Those are really great. That's what I started out with. And especially the disposable ones, you can get a really nice hit. But, of course, I get a hit that's enough for me now because for 3 years I haven't been smoking the real thing.
Well, my husband just heard me talking about this, and he brought over. Now, he's got this. It's gorgeous. It's a work of art. It's a fancy ass. It looks like a miniature. It almost looks like a bong of some kind or a fancy flask. And it really gives you a mouthful of the flavor, much more than
okay,
the
I have a question for you both. Do you, either of you, see yourself in a couple years, like not maybe weaning yourself totally off of these, but using them even less?
Sure, because I've used them less now. I mean, like I was saying, one lasts me maybe a week and a half, if that, sometimes longer, and I go days without even touching the e-cigarette, and then I'm stressed.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going through a stressful week this week. I'm getting an article written about me in the local newspaper.
That's cool. We're all having a lot of stress.
And they're going to identify me. She goes, and I want to identify you as a Wiccan. I think that's cool. And it's like, why? You don't ask that of any other politician what their religion is. And then she goes, but
well,
I want to sit down and do a big article on you.
I want to get back to what we're talking about, though.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, to answer your question, Ra, I don't see myself weaning myself off of it because, like I said at the beginning, I
you
adore
smoking. Right, right.
Right.
So have either of you, Gwen, have you quit anything else, like, intentionally in your life? I mean, you know, like something that somebody would say that they had an addiction to.
Oh, an addiction.
I've almost given up coffee.
Well, maybe not.
Well, yeah. I actually, a couple of times I've successfully lost a great deal of weight.
Okay.
So I think that counts. But other than that,
the only thing I've walked away, you know, quit is, well, I was a young Republican in college.
Ah. Yeah, so was I. God damn.
There you
too.
Go. Yeah. Well,
I've lost almost right around 50 pounds. Now, a lot of that had to do with being sick, but I've kept it off. And I don't think I've necessarily felt an urge to eat. I mean, once in a while, maybe. But, I mean,
yeah.
I always appreciated food anyway, so it didn't matter.
Yeah. But that, I don't know. I mean, like, I did years ago after my spells with every weekend a blackout, I did quit drinking back then, and I've never picked it up to,
oh,
I mean,
no.
I have a drink
oh.
here or there, but I'm not a drinker.
Yeah. Well, see,
yeah,
I did
know,
that a lot when I was younger, too, and I don't do it much anymore.
You know, Ra, I've got to tell you, I actually did for about a year and a half. I was working on a newspaper down here. After I graduated from college, I came home down here, South Florida, and I was working at the Sun Sentinel. And under the political writer, too, taking her notes and her pictures and doing a graveyard shift thing. And on the later evenings and weekends, I was working with somebody learning the music business. So I was in and out of clubs a lot. And I definitely was addicted to Quaaludes.
Ah, okay.
God, I remember that.
I could do 4 to 6 Quaaludes a day after a year. And I walked away from that. I quit that. As it turned out, I quit when I should have, like, taken them for a few days, little, less and less and less. I actually have walked away from something like that. Yeah, I definitely, that counts, yeah.
I personally was a fan of Fastens. I always kind of liked the upper feeling.
Yeah,
I walked away from that years ago.
Right.
Somebody just posted this on Facebook, and this is so funny.
I won't give the name on the air, but there was an over-the-counter, and I don't think they're around now because it was potent and shouldn't have been over-the-counter. For a couple years, I had a real problem. I worked shift work, and as in midnight, and I didn't sleep much at all. And I took these. I really did have a.
What was that stuff called? I know what you're talking about.
We were having a party. Well, I mean, we have lots of parties, but I couldn't find my little thing of pills, and I told him and. He just put the word out. He said, nobody's leaving until we find them because, you know, she has a problem with them. And so we found them. I mean, nobody had stolen them. I had just put them someplace. But, you know, and that was like, wow, you know, so maybe I should sort of back off. But that was my only pill issue back then. But then the alcohol. So, I mean, I guess I have had a couple things, yeah.
Remember when you could smoke anywhere, though? Somebody just posted on Facebook like 2 minutes ago, fast food restaurants, ashtrays. Like, do you remember when you know, they had the little disposable ones at Burger King and McDonald's?
Yeah, they were 10.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah.
You
but, you know,
be able to smoke in a hospital, they'd ask smoking or non.
For relaxation, you know, I'll either read some kind of a good old murder mystery, or I'll watch some old movie on TV. And let me tell you, movies in the 30s, they were smoking. And it's so funny to see now.
Yeah.
Because,
well,
you know,
there's a resurgence of smoking in certain, like on the private cable channels like Showtime, HBO.
Yes, I've noticed that a lot.
And
Shameless has a lot of smokers.
Oh, interesting. Well, they say that, you know, things always come back around. So
everything old may be new again, but everybody knows that cigarettes are, you know, but you will see with, like, I'm trying to think of what show it is. Maybe it was Dexter or something. A character smoked, but yeah,
Dexter. Absolutely. His sister smoked.
Yeah, but one of the characters smoked French cigarettes, you know. It was a thing. We're not smoking bad American cigarettes here. In other words, that's what the message
was. I wasn't on Dexter, but, I mean, his sister chain smoked.
Ladies, our time is up. Thank you so much. I want to say Lynn Holdenberry can be found at Blog Talk Radio, Here Be Monsters, and also daughtersofisis.com. She has been a blender for years and years. So good, good ethical products coming from daughtersofisis.com. Thank you, Gwen, so much. And thank you, Jan.
Thank you.
I know you may be back on Blog Talk at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I plan on it. It's Barefoot Domestic Goddess.
Right. So we will be.
Everybody have a wonderful Yule.
In track.
Yes, you too.
Yes.
Ruthann,
yes.
Thanks for having us.
Sure.
I'll talk to you tomorrow night when I'm on Akasha Temple Live.
Right. We will have our Yule show. So happy Yule, happy Christmas, happy New Year, everyone.
I got to go work on my Yule log for tomorrow night.
All these other things going on. Yeah. So we will talk soon, everybody. Thank you both. And Sarit. Hello.
Hi. How's everyone doing?
So, wow, you know, it's just, this is our last show before the new year, and I've been watching some of the news from Palestine, and it seems that the Zionists are determined to show their ass, for want of a better phrase, over like Bethlehem and Nazareth, and you know, like these so-called holy cities in Jerusalem, you know, the ones that the Jewish people, the Christian people, the Muslim people all consider holy. So,
oh yeah,
it's ridiculous. And you sent me something that was very funny. I mean, some of the Israelis, they're so funny. And I'm talking about like the non-Zionists, the ones that actually make fun of their government. And things, it's so good to see that, because you know how we really like our musicians or artists, cartoonists, whoever is making fun of our government. So it's fun to see that there's a lot of Israelis that are doing the same.
Yes, they have very few musicians doing it.
Yeah.
They have a few.
Yeah.
I think they should have more right now, but... You know,
well, it's scary. I mean, it's a scary thing. So when we do have them, we need to support them. Whether, you know, I mean, I'm not saying like send them money. I'm just saying like drop them a message or an email or something. Just say, hey, good work, you know, keep it up kind of thing. Because, you know, like we like it when people say, hey, I mean, that's not why we do it, but we like it. And somebody says, Sarit, Ruthann, you know, thanks for what you're doing. We like it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's just a nice thing to do. So let them know. But what's been going on, Sarit? What's been happening?
Every time I want to check what happens, my heart breaks. A few things have happened. There's been the African refugees decided on a day that the snow crowded them to escape the prison they're at in the south. Have you heard of that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, and they were very cold because they had no coats. Some of them had no shoes. Many of our Israeli activist friends went to meet them, bring them coats, shoes, food. They were going to march all the way to Jerusalem. And it's so strange. You know, I was just surfing Facebook today, and this guy sent me a death threat. So I went to see who that is, and some Israeli guy, and I look at the stuff on his wall. I thought maybe I'd learn what those people think. And you know what he had on his wall? An article about the African refugees passing through a town where there's right-wingers, and the right-wingers were proud of beating them up.
Oh, God.
And my friends went to bring them food and clothes and say they're wonderful. My friends absolutely fell in love with them. They're amazing human beings who have been through to hell and back.
Right. But can you imagine? It's like they were proud of beating up on these poor people who had come out of prison with no shoes even. And they're going to
With no shoes, no coat, and it's... was freezing.
It's very cold. 30 degrees,
you know? I think it was about 30 degrees that day. It's an exceptionally cold day.
They're proud of that? It's like how...
They were proud of it. And
how subhuman can you be?
Those people are a problem because those are the people that vote for Netanyahu. And there's people more extreme than that who say they have to have a revolution because Netanyahu is not taking the settlements fast enough.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay, well...
They're calling all the Arabs and the lefties.
Fascism is alive and well, not just in this country,
but it's alive and well. Sometimes my lefty friends from Israel get annoyed with me because I don't really comprehend how bad things are there, even though it's hard to imagine. I mean, six people have burned themselves in the last year.
In Israel, in Gaza. You're not going to hear that here on the mainstream media. You're not going to hear that Israelis are self-immolate at all. But you're talking about how old it is. I saw beautiful pictures of Jerusalem with tons of snow.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. But if the people aren't prepared for it, I mean, there was a lot of snow. This climate change.
Totally not prepared. All the electricity went down.
Yeah. But, no, fascism, it seems like it's a worldwide thing. I just saw in an article, they said that 1.7 million Israelis are living under the poverty level.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what you've been telling me, that people are, you know, dumpster diving for food.
Oh, yeah. It's very hard. I remember my mother struggling when I was a kid, and things are much worse now.
Yeah. So go ahead.
If you're a woman over 40 and you want a job, if you don't look really good, you're in trouble. It's really important what you look like if you're a woman there in most jobs.
Oh. Well, you know, still, to an extent, that's it here, too. I mean, maybe not the same degree, and not certain businesses, but some businesses are still that way. You can tell when you walk in. Like if you go into a big office or something, you can tell right away if it's that kind of a place or not. Just by the way the people look and the age, of the women. Not the men so much. Older men, they'll hire, or they have a better chance than older women. But, there's still a lot of sexism here. But, well, and then also, somebody gets out of the university, and they can't get hired either. Because there's either not jobs or whatever. I mean, I know that's true for Palestinians. I assume it's probably true for some of the Israelis.
Yes, it is. Especially for the Israeli minority women or Palestinian women, too. It's very hard. Poverty in Palestine is worse than in Israel, much worse.
Yeah.
And even if you're a computer programmer who would have a wonderful life here or in Israel, they are making less than minimum wage sometimes. I have heard from talking to them that their poverty situation is insanely terrible. I don't know how to describe it. But what they do in Palestine, families help each other. If your neighbor is hungry, your other neighbors will help.
Yeah.
They take care of their neighbor. They're close to their families. So they take care of each other in a beautiful way.
Well, they have to. Because in Gaza, you can't get in or out. Okay? So there's no matter what kind of a degree you can come up with from the university, there's only X number of businesses there.
There is.
They don't have free trade with the rest of the world. I don't have any trade with the rest of the world. And the Egyptians, I really think Egypt is just about as bad as Israel because they are pretty much, you know, keeping people out. And we know that we've just had all those storms and so there's more water with the sewage that's all over the streets. There's more water and electricity, what, 8 hours a day. Drinking water is hard to come by. And Egypt hasn't let anybody come there. You know, they say they're evacuating people from certain areas of Gaza, but they're still putting them in, like, higher areas of Gaza because they won't let them out. So, I mean, what do you do with people who are entrapped in a concentration camp and, you know, they've been flooded with the sewage and everything? I mean, what can you do? Kids are getting infections and rashes and everything?
Isn't it terrible? I just try to talk to as many people as I can. I'm so glad some people have helped, made me some administrators of pages so I can help.
Yeah.
I feel like history totally repeated itself. And when I talk to I go in the revolution groups when I feel strong and go and argue with Israelis, and it gives me flashbacks. Even though I have not lived the Holocaust, my grandparents did, some of them, and my aunts, and I feel like I'm talking to Nazis, like talking to the Israeli extreme right wing. It's exactly the same. I cannot say any differences anymore. When they're proud of beating up people because they're black,
See, something like that is we can't understand. I guess the closest thing would be in this country would be like the Ku Klux Klan.
I haven't seen them here.
They're here. They're still here. I mean, maybe not to the degree that they were years and years ago, but at that point, I mean, it didn't matter who the person, if the color of their skin was dark.
Oh, wow.
They would hang them or do something, castrate them. It didn't matter. It didn't matter how good the person was, whatever. If these crazy people wanted to, they just take them out, and if it was a woman, they take her out and rape her and kill her, and you never hear from her again. Or a guy, they would leave hanging. But that's what it makes me think of, because there was not, I mean, the people who were in the Klan, a lot of them were like the town officials, you know, the mayor and the police and everything. So nothing was ever done to them in a lot of small towns in America. And that's what it makes me think of, the settlers and everything. They just do whatever they want. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Nothing happens to them. They just
absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely. Today, two boys got shot.
Oh, shit. What?
21-year-old and 23-year-old. I wish I know how to speak Arabic, because I know if I try to say their name, I probably wouldn't say it right. Mm-hmm. But one of their name is Ali and Nafi from Jenin. They were killed while they were sitting in peace. They didn't know that they were about really crazy.
Oh, no, that's...
And you know, those people that threaten to kill me just because I care about human rights, yes, I believe it now. And when I lived in Israel, they used to tell me, oh, don't believe all this, the Palestinians are using propaganda against us. No, I believe that this is all true, because when they threaten to kill me because I ask questions very gently even, I know they are. I know this is.
Right.
Looks like if
you're
it could be my
sister. Yeah, I mean, you don't just go in and attack. You go in with information, and then, like you said, you're asking questions. And
I go in gently sometimes, and then once in a while, I make a horrible meme and attack them. You know what happened during the Gaza war? I attacked them all. I went in there and attacked them.
Yeah, well, that was, you mean the
I understood they'll press like on it. It was like that kind of, you know, the good people understood.
Yeah, well, that's it. And that's what we have to keep concentrating on. In all the different areas of the world, that there's so many good people, and they're understanding. They understand what's going on in other countries, and it's very I don't know. I mean, it just leaves me so optimistic that
great. I just want the world to know it drives the good Israelis crazy, like it's driving us crazy.
Sure. I mean, that's it. And like Tamar and, you know, different people there who are, like, she's running off to get herself arrested for demonstrating and things. But, you know, they, of course, it makes them crazy. Just like it makes us crazy here, the stupid stuff that the government does. Like war, you know, we've got over 800 military bases around the world. There's no excuse for that.
An empire.
Yes. And just like, I don't, what was it, did you make up the meme about the wedding?
Or was no, that, I found it. It was so funny and sad at the same
right.
time.
I mean, it was so ironical. It's a picture of Obama for our listeners. And it said, when he crashes the wedding, he really crashes the wedding. And it had the picture of the drone hitting the wedding party. Because this is true. This is, you know... Come on. This country has killed a lot of people in several different wedding parties. A lot of them have been in Afghanistan and Pakistan, but not exclusively. And, you know, there is no excuse. No excuse for that.
Crash a wedding. That's terrible. I think it was from Occupy Chicago. I'm not sure.
It was just so true. I mean, it was one of those, you know, you sort of burst out laughing because the play on words on crash, but then you just want to cry because it's so true. And, you know, weddings are supposed to be such a joyous occasion. And
yeah.
Yet, and so, of course, everybody who was killed and all their families, they're going to hate this country. Of course they do. And I don't take it personally because they don't hate me because I'm not the government. And that's the thing we have to understand. That just like we hate the Zionist government, people around the world hate the U.S. government. But we do too, and we live here. And so that's the whole thing. The people around the world don't like their governments. They don't like our governments. And we've got so much in common right there, you know, because we all just want to be safe and healthy and happy and have our kids get a good education and have food, you know?
Yes. That's not happening.
Human rights. No, we're not asking for more. And
by the way, many people are being detained in Palestine every day, at least 20 people a day.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. And if I name all the names of people who get killed every day in one week, hurt or, you know, violated, I would need a few hours.
Right, and because you don't, you just can't, some of it is just, it's done and tucked away, put away, and it's not reported. That's a lot like in Kashmir, where, you know, so many people were just disappeared, and really disappeared, and, you know, buried in just unmarked graves or mass graves and everything. And so you never really get the full picture or their full complete numbers.
I remember when the guy was doing the movie Five Broken Cameras on our home feed, suddenly, they broke my camera. Facebook.
Yeah, I mean.
They broke five of, how many, five cameras?
Yeah. But he
and
was
every
like.
Time people from all over the world would send him money for a camera.
Yeah, that was, he was lucky, though, that it was only the cameras that were broken. I mean, that his life was...
he must have angels.
Yes, definitely. Because, you know, you'd say, well, okay, once or twice, and then the next time they get him. And, I mean, he made it. So, yeah, his angels were watching over him for sure.
Wow, that's amazing.
That perseverance. I mean, he wasn't giving up. And
I admire him.
Yeah, but I think that's it. The Palestinian people I talk with, they have hope. They're optimistic. I mean, they have their bad days, let's face it. If you were walking through shit to get every place you were going in Gaza, I mean, you would have your bad days, okay? But still, they have that optimism, that hope, that faith. It's like, my God, they're so inspiring.
They are.
Yeah.
Very hopeful.
Yeah, very hopeful. And so I think that they keep us going when we start to get discouraged about the governments and the stupid fascist people, like the ones that give you death threats and everything. You know, then we look at these people who are just doing the best they can day to day today.
Oh, yeah, and they're trying to pass a law in the Knesset to tax the left-wing organizations and the human rights organizations 45%.
45%?
That which will destroy them, yes. And even C.P. Livni is against it.
Really?
Which I thought it was strange. She striked me as a fascist.
Right, but she's against it?
She said it's a danger to democracy when you oppress people because you don't agree with them politically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, she's right. But isn't that...
We can agree on one thing. That's good.
Yeah, we can. But isn't it a joke that they're still talking about what a great democracy Israel is?
Yeah.
You know.
And the boycott is really working.
I think so. Several countries have been jumping on, and Israel seems to be getting upset about that. So it's like, yeah, come on. BDS people, boycott, reverse.
It's not just Palestinians that are suffering. It's Israelis that are suffering there very much. I mean, Israelis are burning themselves, refusing to serve in the military, and it's the record numbers this year of refusing
being jailed and being alienated. And then the poverty level, it keeps rising. Like here, I mean, our country isn't the only one that has more people below the poverty line, you know, whatever, because I should look up, I do not know quite the population of Israel, but 1.7 million people under the poverty line, that's quite a bit.
Have a lot of people there. I don't think they have more than 6 million.
Yeah, see?
Actually, do not know. Sorry about that. I haven't lived there in a while.
But so you're talking about like maybe a quarter of them then are under,
Maybe including the Palestinians too. To me, it's all one people. It's like a civil war when I see them fighting amongst each other.
Okay.
Because we have the Palestinian Jews, the Palestinian Arabs, the Jewish Europeans, you know, it's like many ethnic groups, and they're divided because the government decided to divide us somehow.
Right. Well, that's it. I mean, the government is always going to try to divide the people.
But, you know what they did in 1948 when the Arab Jews came? They put them in the worst places. And when they tried to escape, they put checkpoints so they couldn't leave. They took their children away from them because they didn't like their children. They wanted a European country. They didn't like the way they were raising. So they stole a lot of the Yemeni people's children and did some Nazi experiments on them, like medical experiments where they got sick. And
right. Okay, I've got numbers for you.
Suffering goes on both sides, and I'm just learning.
in April this year, on Israeli Independence Day, in April 2013, population was 8 million, but the Jewish portion of that was 6 million, 75.3%. The Arabs were 1,658,000, and others, quote, others, were 318,000. So the Jewish population in Israel is 6,000. So you're right. to 1.7 is somewhere about 25% of the people are living under the poverty level.
And we know there those people are working, a lot of them. I know my friend from Israel, she has a full-time job. Her husband is a disabled Israeli veteran turned peace activist, and they don't have enough money to raise their twins.
Well, now, let me ask you, he's a disabled Israeli vet. Does he get anything from the state? Like
very
a,
little.
Pension or something?
Not enough to raise a family. Not
right.
enough.
Yeah.
Not enough to feed a family.
Yeah.
I think it's a joke. Disabled vets should be treated great. I don't know why. I guess because they thought they were doing a good thing for their country.
Well, that's the whole thing.
Now
I'm getting very whatever. I like 5 years ago, even four, maybe three, but now when somebody here says that, you know, they're going in the service or whatever, I mean, it's just like, I think, okay, so you're a murderer in your heart, because how can you be so stupid nowadays when it's everywhere? You know, you have to really be stupid and brainwashed, ignorant and brainwashed, to go into the service and think, you know. But that's it. The brainwashing, a small town, conservative, fascist, whatever, Tea Party kind of people.
Or maybe very low IQ.
That too. And, well, you know, poor people, because that's a way to get an education. They always push that. Well, join the army, join whatever, and you know, they'll put you through school. You'll learn a trade, you this and this. And so they don't want to think about the fact that, well, part of this is killing people, and if you don't actually do the killing, you're still supporting those who do. So I do feel bad for the veterans, because, like you say, I mean, when they go in, well, a lot of them are just going and whatever, but some actually think that they're doing something good, and they're not going in for greedy reasons or whatever. But
yeah, I find those too.
Yeah, but you see, and you would think the people could see from the way the veterans are treated, man, you know, when you
isn't
get
that amazing?
You'll be lucky if you get the medical care that you're going to need. I can't remember the statistics, but I saw again today or yesterday about how many American veterans, you know, how they're killing themselves. And
yes.
Okay. And just like you talk about breaking the silence, the group of Israeli veterans who are talking about what they did,
what
and
crimes
how they feel about
they
it now. Yeah.
They feel terrible now.
Sarit, before we go, tell people how, because I don't know if listeners, if you don't know, Sarit is a fantastic artist. How can people see and buy your art? Tell us.
They can go to my Facebook page, Sarit Jacobson. Sarit Jacobson. And
mm-hmm.
there's on the page, and my website link is on the page too.
Okay. Because you have wonderful paintings, and some of them are actually huge.
Most of them are huge.
Yeah, it's gonna
that's why some of them are pricey, but some of them are cheap too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really this would be a wonderful present, people, for yourself, for your own family, or to give a present to somebody else. This is the time of year we talk about presents. So, Sarit Jacobson. And
thank you.
Look her up. She's got wonderful things there. Yeah. Well, happy Yule, Sarit, and Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year, and
happy
all
New
the
year.
Other holidays. so we'll be back
and
on
happy birthday.
happy everything. We'll be back on the 8th of January for Gather Round. So there'll be lots to talk about then.
Great. Okay.
So good night.
right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.